everybody. This is Adam Seward. This is Awake in Life. Wake up. Wake up if you're sleeping. If you're in delusion, wake up. This is this is Awake in Life, and I'm here with Rick Seward and Paul DeFuhrer. Rick, welcome back from the islands.
Oh, Adam, it's so great to be back.
You look great. You look tan. You look relaxed. You're smiling.
You look great and tanned and relaxed.
Yeah, we spent some good time out there together.
It was great.
I think I'm still, you know, reaping the benefits.
I am too. The ocean and being there all morning, all afternoon until from sunrise to sunset was just gorgeous.
Yeah, spiritual practice.
It was.
You know, sun worship.
Gratitude.
Gratitude, yeah. Yeah. So sweet, so sweet. But I'm glad you're here, though. We missed you last week.
Well, I missed you guys, too. But I was able to listen to the show online from the beach.
Worldwide. You know, that's the meaning of worldwide right there. You know, that's
thanks
to the internet and broadcasting, we can do that.
Yes, it was really, really cool.
Yeah, so... Paul, good to have you here.
Hey, happy to be here.
You're looking good too.
Thanks for saying.
For those
that.
Of you, for those of you, for those of you who can't see him there. And Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah,
good.
I'm awake.
See,
so no more shouting. Okay.
The show's it's working, right?
It is.
You're just getting ready for Junpo's visit, man.
I'll tell you what. That's right. We've got a special show for you today. We've got Isaiah Landers with us. I'll be introducing you to him in just a bit. He's just, you know, one of the sweetest souls we've had on the show, and so we're thrilled to have him back. We're going to be talking to him in a bit. Also, for those of you who want to connect with us, you can call in and bring your questions to 425-373-5527 or 888-298-KKNW. That's 5569. So, and we want to hear from you as usual. And actually, I've had a few emails come in, people sending their questions in that direction. And I want to encourage anyone else out there who would like to send a question through email. You can do that at hello@adamseward.com. You can also go onto the website, which is, again, adamseward.com, fill out the contact form there, and we will get back to you, and we'll air your questions on the air. And one of the questions that actually came in this last week that I appreciated was asking about subtle energy practice. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, subtle energy practice, and we may talk to Isaiah about that today too. But the question was basically just like, what does that mean? What is a subtle energy practice? And so I wanted to address that because I think that, you know, we talk a lot about meditation and we talk about koan practice, but I think some people are, you know, curious about what a subtle energy practice is. And I have to say that my subtle energy practice is one of the absolute greatest joys in my life. I didn't even really have what I would have called a subtle energy practice before this year, but just as of, you know, the 2011, I really have been doing a lot of work with inner energy. And, you know, one of the ways that I like to think about it is, you know, that chill that you get when you like hear a beautiful song. I mean, everybody knows that, right? I mean, you hear a song, it just moves something within you. Well, that's subtle energy. I don't think a lot of people know that, but I mean, it's just the inner vibration that's just beneath the skin, you know, like in the hands you know, just what's sometimes referred to as the inner body. That's an aspect of that is what's called the subtle body. And so part of what, you know, I do is I do what's called a Kriya yoga practice, and that involves actually circulating subtle energy in what could be called a microcosmic orbit. And it's a great way of just clearing the subtle energy system, or another thing you could call it is just the soul, really. Paul, I mean, would you say that right? That the subtle body and the soul are somewhat equivalent?
Well, there's a lot of different models to consider, but essentially they correspond to waking, dreaming, and deep sleep, right? So the gross body is your physical form. Subtle body practice is more sleep, dreams, thoughts, ideas, images, that kind of thing. And very subtle. In Tibetan, they call the causal level a very, very subtle. So it's just a little tiny level of
So these are dimensions of our being, essentially.
That's
we've got there's the physical body, the subtle body, and then the capital S self body, which
that's
is
right.
the and that that correlates to deep dreamless sleep and the deepest states of meditation or the most subtle states of meditation.
And it's the way things evolve. We talked a little bit about evolution too, but it goes from my matter to body to mind to soul to spirit. That's the That's one of the great models.
Did you experience any of that Saturday?
Oh, with the gravy?
No, the meditation.
Oh. Well, yes and yes.
And yes.
Actually, what he's referring to is on Saturday, I did an all-day Christmas meditation, what it's called. It was at the Self-Realization Fellowship Temple out in Shoreline. And oh boy, yeah, it was wonderful. It was just great. You know, we started at 10 a.m. and we ended at 6 p.m. and it just flew by. So the answer to your question, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Whenever I'm practicing, whenever I'm meditating, I'm always including my subtle body practices. Mm. It's just too fun not to. So whoever, to the person who sent in that question, I think it's a great question. I appreciate it. And just to add a little bit more to it, I mean, it's like, the subtle body, sometimes it feels like what I've called the divine light blood of your God self. So that's another way of thinking of that subtle body. Yeah. Paul gave me kind of an interesting look.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, it's that divine wine, that circulates through our being. So that's the answer to the subtle body practice. It's time for a doorway segment. Throw your soul through every open door. Count your blessings to find what you look for. Turn my sorrow into treasure gold. You pay me back in kind and reap just what you sow. All right, so this is our doorway segment. What is a doorway? Well, a doorway is a tool or a practice that's designed to open you further into your deepest realization. And so for this segment, what we normally do is we talk about a practice. And the practice I want to talk about today is what's called pranayama. It's also known as kriya yoga. And Paul, you're familiar with this, correct?
Pranayama, sure.
Pranayama. Yeah. What this is basically, and this is... if you're familiar with Sri Sri Ravi Shankar or Paramahansa Yogananda or Muktananda, one of the things that they teach is Kriya Yoga. Muktananda didn't teach Kriya Yoga, but a lot of the work that you're doing in the meditative process involves, again, like what we were talking about earlier, is the circulation of subtle energy. And so if you're curious about learning more about what pranayama is, if you want to go deeper into that, I encourage you to go to my website and go to the meditation section. It's www.adamseward.com, and I have some outlines there of a subtle energy practice, particularly a Kriya Yoga practice. And this is something that I just do every day, and it's just one of the greatest gifts that I've ever been given. When I went through the ceremony to learn my Kriya technique, they were throwing rose petals all over us, and it was just so sacred. So, we're going to be talking to someone today, like I said before, who knows a lot about subtle energy, knows about a lot of things.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I've got Paul and I both have questions for him because he's a teacher of teachers. And he's been an enormous starlight in both of our lives. So we're going to go to our first break. And when we come back, we're going to be with the sweet, sweet Isaiah Landers. You're listening to Awaken Life. We'll be right back. You're listening to Awakened Life. Real talk, right here, right now. Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And I'm Rick Seward.
And together we have partnered to bring you Awakened Life as part of our commitment to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. That's also why we decided to create the Awakening Foundation. Well, what's the Awakening Foundation? The Awakening Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's designed to help facilitate the evolution of consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awaken Media. We'd love to connect with you. For more information on the Awakening Foundation, go to adamseward.com. If you'd like to find out more or to talk with us about how you can support the mission, fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you right away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life. We look forward to connecting with you.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to the Dr. Pat Show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1150, KKNW, and visit thedrpatshow.com.
At the law offices of Richard D. Seward, we care about our clients. We offer important legal advice and services to help them grow their wealth and protect it. We manage the risks and help the financially distressed through the recovery process. We are committed and dedicated to helping people throughout Western Washington and beyond with our expertise in business, real estate, tax law, and debt relief. Find us at richardseward.com or call us at 360-876-6425. We care about you.
God, I love that song. Welcome back to Awaken Life. Do you hear that line? She goes, the river will have to drown me before I can breathe easy. That sounds pretty good.
I like it.
Well, we're gonna get a little drunk and drown, I think, in the light and love of the divine today. And that's just a hunch because of who our guest happens to be. We had Isaiah on a while ago, and it was just, so much fun, such a pleasure. And he's back with us today. And what can I say about him? I mean, he's just a divine light every time you talk to him, and just one of the sweetest presences I've come into contact with. And so, Isaiah, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Wow, I'm falling in love again here. My goodness. You guys are amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks
for having me. It's really a pleasure to be with you guys. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a real honor for us too. And you know, last time we had you on the show, we learned a lot about your amazing foundation, One Voice of Peace, which is actually bringing awakening into the schools in a very skillful and real way, and in a way that works, that actually shows results. So I'm obviously a huge fan of the foundation, and we can talk about some of that today. But I'd also like to talk about just your personal journey. Paul and I were talking before the show today and just agreeing that we were curious just to kind of get into your history, your life, and what brought you to this point.
Okay. What would you like to know?
Well, when you start, I remember you telling me you started kind of in the corporate life
yeah, that was, back a ways.
See, I was going to start right at the ashram, but let's get that's some more background.
Yeah, I mean, what was it that, you know, kind of like woke you up or to the fact that, hey, this corporate thing isn't for me? I mean, what really happened there?
Well, that came, I had my personal renaissance, you know, quite a while back in 1968. And that was, a big turnaround. Prior to that, like you mentioned, I was in the corporate arena and having my good time there. Actually, it was pretty much a lark, playing with all that primitive consciousness out there. And it was a good training ground for what was to come. And life was good.
What helped bring about your personal renaissance? Was it a particular teacher, or how did that?
No, not at all. I had no background in meditation or spiritual practices, no sadhana of any kind. In the choir when I was a kid for 6 years, that was pretty much my sadhana, and not having any formal studies, no, you know, seeking a guru, that kind of thing. Kind of the guru came to me. I didn't go to him. So it's kind of worked out that way. My life's been kind of like that.
Isaiah, could you say? Could you tell Isaiah, could you tell the listeners what a sadhana is, if they're not, in case they're not familiar with what that means, sadhana?
Sadhana is a spiritual practice, whatever that may be for you. Okay. It's different for everyone, but in the East, it's referred to as a Sanskrit term called sadhana. And I had no practice, per se, at that time. My practice prior to my awakening was being a scoutmaster and flying airplanes and racing motorcycles on weekends. And
Would you say it was like a sudden awakening? Was it like that?
Yeah, it was instantaneous, right?
Oh.
No, it was one of those rare, it was rare, and I knew it at the time, and since it's been confirmed many times. what I received in that instant was everything, basically, that I share with everyone today. Anything that I read post-awakening, so to speak. It's the time to come into the body. I mean, we're all in stages of coming into the body. We do it when we first are born into this plane, but we don't fully embody, you know, as I'm sure you know, until we come to a point where ascension is a given. That means leaving this plane in a conscious way. So that requires the one major component, and that's fearlessness. No concerns, no worries, you know.
Yes.
No judgments.
Right. It's always calming talking to you, Isaiah.
Well, it's a big thing about a personal renaissance is that fear that there's an end can be a real block, you know.
Well, that's true, and I think that's, you know, what most people, you know, their fears, if there are fears of so-called letting go, is you know, whatever past experiences that one has in their subtle memory of leaving the planet. Mostly people have not left the planet, as far as reincarnation is concerned. Most people have not left in a very pleasant manner. History will kind of give you a picture of that. So there's a tendency to have a subtle, if you will, backpedaling or avoidance when, for example, sometimes people can't handle other people being sick or they fear for themselves in some way. So that's where that comes from.
Okay, so after you had that awakening, then is that when you head to, like, Ojai, and is that where you went next? Is that kind of how it went?
No, actually, no. it was quite a moment of that awakening. It certainly turned my life around. Although it was a good life, it just made things much more clear. And Ojai came in a vision. I was guided by a bunch of kids that hung around with my my younger brother, who, when we started having a bit of a satsang gatherings at our home, they realized that what I was sharing, one of them had heard about the Theosophical Society, and they have a headquarters not too far from where I lived in Illinois. And when I stopped in, they took me in. They realized what was going on with me, and I walked away from a very lucrative position that I was being groomed for, and had left everything with having house payments and airplane payments and car payments and all of that sort of thing. And yet I just walked
payments.
Away.
following the call of the heart.
Yeah.
So, but they took me in and they paid everything, paid my bills, just put me on staff and took care of me. And a vision brought me to Ojai Valley where we had our community.
Tell us a little bit about that community. That's a really unique experience.
Well, it's you know, the vision that there was going to be a community, I had no clue. But when we got to Ojai, they just opened up the doors for me there as well. But Ojai is the headquarters for the International Esoteric Order of the Theosophical Society, which was mainly responsible for all this spiritual knowledge that's come into the planet since 1900, along with Vivekananda and later than Paramahansa Yogananda and Trungpa Shay and some of the other, you know, Buddhist teachings and so forth all came in around that time.
It was the basis for all the human potential movement. A lot of the personal growth work that people do in seminar training still is based on a lot of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. But it was witchcraft back then. They had to do it all underground. So I had a deep respect for those people, and they really nurtured the experiences that I was going through and allowed for ways to help make that easy for me. Mm-hmm. And the community came out of, well, Thomas, our brother Thomas up there by you guys, Thomas... A friend of his was a pilot, actually a captain with United Airlines, walked into a bookstore at the Theosophical Society that I was managing at the time to help the lady out that was running it. And he came and said, why don't we, he said, we open a bookstore, our own. And when he said we, that was my signal that the community was about to begin. So it came from there. Yeah. And we had a 12-year run, which was quite the fun.
I know, you know, Paul, when Paul first introduced me to Thomas, he said, you know, this is a guy who spent, I don't know, 9 years in the ashram. And immediately I wanted to meet him just because that's who I am. And I mean, I considered renouncing, you know, after the fire and things last year. It's just it's the nature of my particular journey. So Isaiah, when I think about the time that you spent in the ashram there with Muktananda, for those of you who don't know Muktananda, just one of the greatest sages of the century and certainly a very powerful lineage of Siddhi Yoga that followed his work. But I'm very curious, Isaiah, about, first of all, what inspired you to go into that lifestyle of living in an ashram, and also just what that experience was like for you.
Well, thank you for asking. Actually, our community really was an ashram without having a name to it. My guidance led me to certain scriptures, Buddhist scriptures, and Indian texts, the Vedas and so forth, because they were in alignment with the truth that came through in my awakening. Mm. And so we had a big library to help others. So we were not an ashram, you know, just a community initially with the various businesses we had, restaurant and health food store and boutique and all that sort of thing. But one of the ladies that was in our ashram, in the community, she came one summer and said, I have to go now. And I said, okay, good. And she went back to hang out up with a saint called Joya Ma, a little Jewish lady from New York that had an awakening. And her guru was Muktananda's guru, Nityananda.
Mm. Right.
So she hung out with Joya Ma in the Bay Area. And Joya Ma said, no, you got to go over to the Muktananda's ashram over in San Pablo and whatever it was in Oakland. And so she did, and when she got there, she wrote me a letter and saying that they're doing everything that we were doing, including Om Namah Shivaya and Soha Mantra came to me, all these came, and we were doing all that. So she said, they're doing everything that we were doing, only it's got a name, it's Siddhi Yoga. And I said, oh, that's cool. Well, she said, well, you got to come up. She said, you got to come up here. Well, what happened is that there's a photograph of Nityananda that came out of the letter that she sent me And I had another star, or what we call a solar initiation, that came. This light just flew out of that picture into my heart, and I knew it was the same energy that woke me up years earlier.
Solar initiation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. That is such... I've never heard that before. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Solar initiation. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you know, the truth is that this what we call a sun. I'm trying to get everybody, educate everyone to start speaking to it as our star, because it is our star.
Right.
And it's the life giver.
Yeah.
It's the life giver. It's that entity that's alive, just like the earth is alive.
And also super conscious. You know, that was the thought that came to me recently, too, is that it's, you know, it's a super conscious being, isn't it?
Yeah, you could say that.
Well, it's appropriate. Yeah, it's appropriate.
He likes it. Yeah. He likes it. I can tell.
Well, I love that, you know, that Nityananda was the silent guru. So I love that it was through just a photograph that you were able to, you know, make that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's that's the connection. And that took me up there to for a couple of weeks and bring all the paraphernalia back, the tambouras and the harmoniums and the song books and all that. We became an official ashram, a rebel ashram, however, we never filed any reports, and they got on my case, and I said, hey, if Baba wants me to do something, he'll tell me.
that sounds like devotion. This is great, Isaiah. Thanks. We're going to go to our next break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about this time in the ashram and the journey that led to the sun that's on the other end of the phone here. We'll be right back.
You got it.
So say what you will before it's too late. Say what you will.
Gidsen Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees, and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
Say what you will before it's too late. Say what you will.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is Awaken Life, and this is Adam here with Rick and Paul and our dear brother Isaiah. If you've been listening, we've been talking about his journey to this point, and we were just talking before break about some of the time that he spent Isaiah, that you spent at the ashram, and I'd love to hear more about, you know, what that time was like for you, and also, you know, just the... What it was like to study under someone like Muktananda.
Thank you for asking that. To be right clear with you is that Muktananda came to Ojai Valley in 1974, and I was not, you know, really inspired necessarily to go hang out with him at that time. Mm. I think I was off body surfing somewhere, actually. Shortly then, thereafter, Shawnee sent me that letter, I got to go visit the ashram. I wasn't particularly taken too much with him personally, but the energy of the ashram was very much like our own, so I was very much at home. And because he is who he was, that was enough for me to... send everybody in our community, in our ashram back in Ojai, send all of them to spend 2 weeks with him in Hawaii over a stretch of a couple months. Mm. didn't go. It was 2 years later when I actually went to India to be with him, because in meditation, I meditated about average of 4 hours a day over those 12 years. And in my meditation, I would go leave my body and go into the photograph we had of him, which was a very powerful photograph on our altar. And I'd end up with him in India and having experiences that were beyond being with him in physical, to be honest with you. So when I did go over to be with him, it was I felt I had to have some adjustment on my crown chakra. And that was, I didn't know anyone that I would really feel good about being with on that score, with, except for him. So I did go to India, and he accommodated me there with taking care of that little bit of, it's a long story. Got lots of stories, so I won't go into them. But nonetheless, which is to say the least, what I learned from him was what he spoke into was the highest samadhi. The samadhis are the high levels of meditation that one can go into, satori and so forth, and nirvana, reaching nirvana through meditation. And he said the highest samadhi is sahaj samadhi, which is waking samadhi, being fully present in the daily life. And he was. And I thought, yeah, that's it. That's cool. It's not about sitting in a cave. It's about being able to be totally present, not fazed by the world, and not, you know, be in it but not of it, as it goes. And so what I learned from him was basically, yeah, we can do this.
It's
and
possible.
He was, yeah, he was sharing it as an example, not like, look at me, I can do this. Although he did pull some interesting tricks for me.
Well, that's the part that's really juicy, because it's not some idea. It's not some concept to carry with you. It's more a way of being in the world. And just through his own example, he can show that it's actually possible to live in non-opposition, which I know is a big part, central teaching in your, you know, your OVP teaching to the kids.
Exactly. It's what we do, you know, share. And these principles and all came through before I ever sat with Muktananda. What I got from him was just affirmations that was right on, you know.
You know, a question came up for me, too, you know, that, I mean, obviously, well, I love what you said, you know, the sahaj samadhi is the, you know, the highest samadhi, being present in the world. I imagine there were also some inner samadhis, too, that he introduced you to as well. So some sort of like inner experiences.
Well, Adam, actually, to be quite clear, I had so many of them way before I ever met him.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah. That being with him was more about connecting with who he is, and on levels that kind of transcend the human guru disciple relationship. To be quite frank,
right.
So, I don't want to spoil any illusions that anyone else might have about a guru-disciple relationship. But you know, gurus can't be gurus without disciples,
right? Right.
And devotees. So that's their karma. That's their position, and their very high position. It takes on a lot of energy, and they have to be pretty strong to be able to do that. All these people show up with all these. Idiosyncrasies of the human experience that they're trying to get through, and he sits there and he's able to absorb all of that in a way to give you a break so you can see who you might really be, and then go back out in the world and try to figure out how to get back there.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I came down to do a transformational retreat with you, I was looking for my final teachers that were my Satguru. And I remember I laughed because you said, "Well, let me go find a mirror." I was like, "Okay, I think I'm in the right place," because the age of the guru is over. It's why we're interested in talking about it, because it's so fascinating that people go do that. But now in the West, it's really not, you know, that's not happening, and it's time for us to kind of be personally responsible now and wake up.
Exactly. Exactly. It's an evolutionary piece, and they still have their value, although it's nice to see when they step down off the throne, and that's kind of a good measure. Mukhtanada did that in a way with turning it over to a woman.
Yeah, Guru Maya, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Guru Maya, if you aren't familiar with the Siddha Yoga line, it's for the listener that isn't, Guru Maya, the successor of Mukhtananda, and also the current spokesperson, in a sense, for the Siddha Yoga path.
Well, Isaiah, let's start with your first principle, which I understand to be empathy. But how do you describe it to the kids?
Well, empathy is pretty simple. We just use an easy definition, and we do physical stuff. You know, kids tell us what's going on and how they realize that they are empathetic with others. But there's at the heart of it, what we do is we go into showing them that things are as they are because of everything that's gone in, all the energy that's gone into creating it the way it is. We do it with, you know, spoons or something physical, and then we turn it to the individual. It's one of the very first things we do when we start off with the kids, so that they can get to see that that people are the way they are because of how they've been, how they grew up, their experiences. All of those have conditioned how they respond, or they react. And so the kids learn about response versus reacting, and they learned about, you know, personal responsibility of not reacting and going into opposition. And we used kinesiology. You were talking about energy before. So we use kinesiology, like it's called, you know, muscle testing, as it were, because the body is intelligent and will let you know whether what you're thinking or saying or reading or looking at is energy giving or energy leaking, taking it away. And it's very visceral, and it blows the kids' minds. They go, whoa. So we're right in the middle of that right now. We've just started it last week.
Great. Okay, yeah. So what's the second principle?
Second principle is do no harm. Mm-hmm. And they all blend together, these principles. So it's like, well, why would you do harm? Well, self-defense always comes up, you know. So, well, you're not doing harm. There are people that are whatever they're doing, and if they are harmed in some way because you're defending yourself, that's something that, you know, you take that on. But why are you there in the first place? You know, how did you get into that? What's your responsibility? We always put it back on that there's no victims. It may appear that way, but if I found myself in a situation that is bringing harm to me, somehow I got there. I made a choice somehow that I got there. It's a little tough for the kids to get that one, so we play around with it in ways that they do get it. So we don't force them. We don't force feed anybody in that score.
Well, that's a radical concept, the idea of that there's no victims, you know. But I love the way you describe it in terms of information, you know, about how no one would really ever harm someone if they had complete information.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's how we work it. You know, we show them that there's information that they have and there's information that they don't have. And when they see somebody that's doing harm, there's obviously they don't have all the information. And so it's something they're learning. It's a slow process for some, and others get it quickly because these kids come from tough circumstances, the ones we're working with specifically. It's 80% Hispanic, and it's a difficult situation because 60% of the parents don't even speak English. And yet, 6 weeks into the program, we had one of the mothers stand up at the parents' meeting we held and say that their daughter turned her daughter's situation around in 6 weeks, totally. Mm-hmm. She was being bullied and had difficulties at home and all that. So it's just about getting through to the kids in a way that makes it easy for them to grasp these principles. And the other ones obviously are they follow no judgment and non-opposition, and it shows that if you're in opposition, you're part of the problem, not the solution. And kids get that really quick.
Well, I sure love, Isaiah, what you know you're doing in terms of bringing these kinds of teachings to kids at that age. I mean, it's the same teaching that I found, you know, at a young age. I found it through a counselor, you know, and again, you know, same message, not, you know, there are no victims, which actually sounds like, for some people, they may hear that as disempowering, but really it's one of the most empowering things you could affirm for someone, because you're affirming that they have choice and that they do have power. So I think it's wonderful. I mean, I was fortunate enough to find a teacher, you know, along the path around 8 years old that could help me and support me into, you know, practicing these principles or similar principle. He had four principles too. They were a little different, but he just happened to have four principles. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to hear more. We're going to go to our next break. When we come back, we're going to hear more about, One Voice of Peace. We're talking to Isaiah Landers. And you're listening to Awaken Life. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And I'm Rick Seward.
And together, we have partnered to bring you Awaken Life as part of our commitment to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. That's also why we decided to create the Awakening Foundation. Well, what's the Awakening Foundation? The Awakening Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's designed to help facilitate the evolution of consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awaken Media. We'd love to connect with you. For more information on the Awakening Foundation, go to adamseward.com. If you'd like to find out more or to talk with us about how you can support the mission, fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you right away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life. We look forward to connecting.
There's an exciting new astrology hour, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silverman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silverman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilvermanAstrology.com.
Are you upside down on your home loan and facing foreclosure? Washington's Foreclosure Fairness Act takes effect on July 13th and requires your mortgage holder to grant you a face-to-face meeting to negotiate modifications to your loan that may let you keep your house. More than 5,600 homes were seized in the first 3 months of this year in the state of Washington. Don't let this happen to you. Visit foreclosurefairness.net. That's foreclosurefairness.net. Or call 206-818-9732, your home safety net.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. We're talking to Isaiah Landers, one of our dear, sweet friends today. He's bringing awakening into the schools and teaching young kids these principles as a young age through his foundation, One Voice of Peace, doing amazing work. And before we went to break, we were talking about the four principles that he's helping to bring into the schools to, you know, help bring awakening and sahaj samadhi to our schools.
So the four principles are harmlessness, empathy, non-judgment, and non-opposition. And we started our show today talking about subtle body practices, Isaiah. So I thought, you know, given that you're really the expert, tell us a little bit about the energetic practice and how those four things, we can work with those and how they relate. That's a heavy one, you know, right?
Yeah, that's probably almost a lifetime study.
That's okay. We've got 10 minutes. So
yeah, you got 10 minutes.
everybody is certainly everybody that's listening to this broadcast has been aware or is becoming more aware of subtle energies in their own life, and address them and welcome them into being feeling good about that, feeling good about the truth that they are very sensitive, and that more sensitive than perhaps they've given themselves credit for, and that this is the nature of the higher self starting to come through stronger, and to be welcoming that process is the key here. And that means being able to be really, really truthful to yourself. We call it being radically honest with yourself about the distractions that may be in your life. Because our distractions generally leak energy from our bodies and our mind and our spirit, our emotional body. So the distractions generally are whatever it is that is what we call the avoidance factor. The avoidance of being present. It takes me away from being really present here and now. So we're either referring to the past or looking toward the future and not necessarily being present. And we do that in our conversation. We do it in our thinking mechanisms. And we do it as well in imagining. We imagine the future, and we imagine how the past could be different if we'd only done something else or if something else had occurred. Well, the truth is things are as they are, and we need to come to terms with that and be really okay with how things have developed up till now. It doesn't mean they have to continue. It just means that if we don't want them to be in a negative fashion in our life and we want to be more alert and more happiness into our life, bring that into our life, then we need to really respond to how the body is responding to the food we eat, to the environment, to the air we breathe, to the people we hang out with. It's just time to reassess for right now, especially now, to reassess who we are hanging out with. Who's in our life? Are they the ones that truly inspire us, or are they needy? Are they looking for someone to take their pain away? The old tradition is bonding but through woundedness, and you find that when people want to draw you into their story. So what we teach, it's not teaching. It's actually demonstrating how energy works in the here and now. And if you're in thoughts of remembrance, if that remembrance is from a negative standpoint, it makes your body weak. So we do a little muscle testing just to prove it to the person. And you can also do it just by being sensitive to your energy fields. And the energy fields are those emanations that go out from your whole body, body, mind, and spirit, your emotional body, your mental body. And there used to be you might remember some time back, there was a cartoonist that had a cloud that hung out over this character in the cartoon. I can't remember what it was.
It was a Pigpen. He always had and Peanuts, right? Hmm? It was a Pigpen and Peanuts. Was that him?
Maybe that. If it's
this. That's the same metaphor. It's the same metaphor.
Or Charlie Brown, yeah.
Right. And he had this attitude that always was a dark attitude. Well, in in Muktananda's book and other publications, they speak about chitti, C-H-I-T-T-I, chitti, is the stuff of consciousness. It's not the thoughts. But it's the stuff that's created in your consciousness, in your mind, that are, if you will, the syrup of the thoughts or the attitude. And so we need to look at that. I think it's really important for people to begin to look at what's your attitude. If you have a positive attitude, or do you have an attitude that's looking for the other shoe to fall, or, you know, what's wrong with this picture rather than what's right with this picture? You know, somebody said, I think, a while back that, you know, better to look at a half-full glass that's got half a glass of water in it. And I say, no, I think it's better if you look at it as a full glass, half full with water and half full with air. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Mm.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say about opposition, you know, it's sort of a real radical idea that you propose, which is not to be in opposition to anything at all, and not just to accept things, but to really embrace the things that in your past you've opposed in some way.
Yeah, it takes a lot of introspection to be able to do that. I'd recommend people just actually do that, especially around what they think about themselves. You know, take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle. On the left side, all the negative things that you've ever felt about yourself that still may be there at some level, write them down. And then you take on the other side and write about the things that are true, that you know to be true about you, that are valuable, and that are your true virtues. You know, and then go back to the other side and look, is that true now? The ones that were negative, that were crippling. And look at it really and say, is that true? Is that true now?
Mm-hmm.
And generally it's not. Generally it comes up, no, it's not true now. I still have some of the feelings about that, but it's not true now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important, I think, for people to look at. Separating their old feelings that are what we call echoes that are no longer valid. They're based on beliefs. And so we're belief busters here. You know, people ask me, well, don't you believe in God? I said, no. You don't? No. Huh. Why not? Because I experienced that presence you call God.
Mm.
It's not a belief. Beyond belief,
yeah,
and faithless, and I'm hopeless.
Oh, beautiful. Well,
that's,
why don't you tell us
why we love you?
Yeah, that's really beautiful, Isaiah. That's awesome.
We love you. Why bother? Tell me, why bother? Why bother with hope?
Yeah.
I mean, hope is good. It's a stepping stone. It's like beliefs can be a stepping stone. It can help, but they can also limit.
Yeah. Well, Isaiah, tell us your website so people can know where to go and check out what you're offering.
Well, we've got a new website coming up soon with the beloved up there in Seattle helping us out with that one. That's ultimatefreedomnow.com, www.ultimatefreedomnow.com. And that's going to be changing radically over the next month. And that's about our personal work with retreats and stuff. But
Paul mentioned, you've been on one of Isaiah's retreats before. Is that right?
Two.
Yeah, two of them. Yeah, and memorable events, obviously.
Life-changing,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the website's going to be for our greater, what we call our gathering of hearts, the greater gathering, which includes you guys and everybody else we've been in touch with over the years, to be able to use it to touch in with people when you travel and connect with our groups and organizations and updates from as to what's happening really for this next change we're walking into in this world. And the other website, obviously, is onevoiceofpeace.org.
Isaiah, thank you so much for your participation today. It's just so sweet always, you know, anytime we talk.
Hey, anytime. And love to Rick. I haven't talked to him, so just one of us. Say hello to him as well.
Love you too, Isaiah. Great to have you here.
All right, we're figuring out who we are over here, and
we've lost all hope, Isaiah.
Celebrating the solar initiation of the planet.
Much love to you.
We'll see you in a few weeks. Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks again, Isaiah. Take care.
Thank you.